News 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
53 days until Election Day. 53 days for Margaret and yours truly to get you prepared for what might be the most consequential presidential election of our lifetime. On today's show, we are talking with Anthony Scaramucci, the short-lived White House Communications Director for Donald Trump in his first term. The Mooch was at the Harris-Trump debate on Tuesday. Later in the show, Northern California Republican Congressman Tom McClintock is here. But first, just some of the things happening in the political world today.
Donald Trump, we've been telling you about this, the former president here in California for a pair of fundraisers going from Los Angeles this afternoon on up to San Francisco tonight. Trump did not miss an opportunity to trash the Golden State and make his case that Kamala Harris and Gavin Newsom destroyed the state.
The state of California is a mess with people leaving, and nothing's going to stop them. They're going to other states. Some are going to other countries. But what they've done, Gavin Newsom and Kamala, I'd almost say Kamala more so. She destroyed San Francisco and she destroyed the state.
Now, it is worth noting that Trump delivered his remarks from the beautiful grounds of his golf course in Rancho Palos Verdes with those gorgeous ocean views behind him.
Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have been on the other side of the country for the last 2 days, holding rallies in more rural and agricultural areas of swing states like Georgia and North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Harris and Walz are purposely targeting rural areas that have often been overlooked by Democratic candidates, trying to steal away some traditional Trump voters in forgotten small towns.
And there have been mail-in ballots already going out to voters in places like Alabama and North Carolina, if you can believe it. That's happening already. Early in-person voting gets going in Pennsylvania on Monday, and later next week, Wisconsin will start sending out mail-in ballots. In the 2020 election, over 100 million Americans voted before Election Day.
Anthony Scaramucci served, as we said, as the White House Director of Communications under President Trump for a glorious 10 or 11 days, there's a dispute about that, always has been, back in 2017. And after that brief run, he became something of a symbol of the personal chaos of the Trump administration. He was at the presidential debate in Philadelphia on Tuesday night, and he joins us now on Countdown. How you doing?
I'm doing great, but let's clear it up.
Yeah,
though, because
yeah,
when
please.
The
go ahead.
Yeah, when the president trolls me on Twitter.
Yeah.
He says I was there for 11 days. So I think when he's making derogatory comments about me on Twitter and he's verifying the 11 days, let's use the president as an official scorer, don't you think?
Sure, why not?
We'll do that.
So you were at the debate. Why did you go? Are you like a masochist? Why were you there?
No, I went there because I went at the invitation of the vice president. She asked me to go. I helped her with her debate prep. And she wanted some people in the spin room that knew the president well, that explained the danger of what he represents to our society, the world, our alliances, our economy. And I was very proud to be there to represent her, but also to stand with my friends. That would include people like Mark Esper. That would include the vice president, Mike Pence. It would include the former vice president, Dick Cheney, and his daughter Liz, as well as Paul Ryan. Right. And so, yeah, I was very proud to be there.
But did you come face to face with your old boss, Donald Trump?
Because he did come in the spin room. I wonder what went through your mind.
He came in the spin room, which was like, you know, if you ever wanted to know anything about how Trump operates, going into the spin room was like, wow, I really got smoked in this debate. Let me go on Sean Hannity's show and lie through my teeth and tell everybody how well I did. And so, had he won that debate, like he won the debate with Joe Biden, he didn't go to the spin room. He left. And same thing with the other debates in years past. But he knew he got smoked. But no, I didn't get a chance to see him because he made a beeline right to Sean Hannity. I was over talking to a group of and a gaggle of journalists. No,
you said,
you know, there's nothing personal about this with me and Donald Trump. It's you know, he's just a systemic danger to the free world and to America. And people need to understand what that is. And so what I tell people is if you had 40 of us, and there are 40 of us that tell people how dangerous he is and how he shouldn't return to the Oval Office, if 40 of us had worked at a pharmaceutical company and we told you, hey, that pill that they're making in the factory is going to kill your family, would you take the pill? Or let's say we worked at an automotive company and said the car is going to go on the highway and combust, would you drive in the car? You know, this is a dangerous, perilous time in the world. Lots of tribal division in the world. And this guy's a very bad dude, should not return to the presidency.
I wonder, you talked about helping the vice president, Kamala Harris, with her debate prep. Do you think she took all your advice into play on that stage?
Well, let me tell you something. What I love about the vice president, she is an inclusive person, and she lives by the old Reagan adage that you can get anywhere you want in life as long as you don't care who gets the credit. You know, Mr. Trump, on the other hand, is a team of one. I knew he was in trouble when that plane landed at 6:57 p.m. into Philadelphia. You can't get yourself in the right frame of mind if you're landing less than 2 hours or just slightly over 2 hours when the debate starts. Jack Kennedy in 1960 got there a day before. Richard Nixon. Most candidates get there a day before out of respect and preparation. But he thought he could phone that in. And she destroyed him. But I don't take any credit for that. She's the one that stood there, and she's the one that took input, not just from me, but from other people that know the former president, but also from her colleagues and her strategists on her campaign. She's a very well-organized person.
All right.
Very well prepared, and she just laid it on him. I mean, she knocked him out in the first 30 minutes.
Yeah, but let me ask you this, since you said that you're one of the people anyway who helped prep Kamala Harris for that debate. Were you one of the people who perhaps advised her to deflect uncomfortable questions? And there were, about her flip-flops from her positions in 2020 till now. Was that part of your advice?
Well, when you say flip-flop, I don't know a politician that doesn't flip-flop.
But you're deflecting my question now. Was that, were you?
I'm not deflecting your question.
Yeah,
I'm just saying that they're all in the same boat. I mean, she's moved her position. She's got to reflect the wishes of the American people. Remember, she's running now for a job that represents all of the American people, and she's had to move on lots of her positions to reflect that. So, you know, look, she didn't have a pitch-perfect debate. I'm an objective guy. We need more substance from her on the economy. We need more density on the answer if you're better off than you were 4 years ago. I accept what you're saying. You know, sometimes when you're in the hot seat and it's live, you can sometimes be evasive. I accept that. But by and large, she showed how foolish she actually is. I mean, I had cat for breakfast. I'm thinking about having dog for dinner tonight. But she showed how foolish she is. She shows how much careless disregard he has for what that office actually represents. And
right,
so I think she had a great debate, but there's a lot of work to do between here and 53 days from now, and we'll be dug in working. She's raised a lot of money and got a lot of registrations this week.
You kind of took the words out of my mouth. She did have a great debate, but there's one area that she really hasn't fine-tuned her message, and that is on the economy. So you said we're going to be working. What kind of advice would you be giving Kamala Harris with regard to that message? Because that's the biggest thing that voters are concerned about.
Be on offense. You know, you have to be on offense. They have a winning legislative agenda. The president has correctly identified that there's a group of blue-collar Americans that feel their grandparents once felt economically aspirational. They now feel economically desperational. President has seen that. You have to give him credit for that. But in the 4 years that he was in the presidency, he offered no policy ideas for that. The vice president and President Biden, you've got four or five things going at once, which have led to rising wages. The inflation's not her fault or the Biden administration's fault. That's systemic and cyclical. Had Donald Trump won in 2020, it would be Trump's inflation. You can't induct $6 trillion into the economy. And so lots of money in the economy, the supply chain gets cut off, less goods and services, more money in the economy. Of course, you're going to have inflation, but they have taken steps to improve wages. They've reshored manufacturing with pieces of legislation. You've got microprocessor foundries now in the United States. Bridges, roads, and tunnels are being repaired, which will reduce the cost of transit of goods and services in the U.S.
All right.
And so she has a platform that she can run on. But remember, she's just been in this job for 50 days now.
It's a very short time.
We'll get her up to speed on this stuff.
Let me ask you this. The polls, while she's gotten in a bump, clearly, since the debate, it's still a tight race by any poll that you look at.
No question.
Are you surprised by that? Because you, at the beginning of our show, ticked off all the things that you say is wrong with Donald Trump. then why do so many Americans not see what you're seeing?
Well, I think they do, actually. I think they've decided that they're going to hold their nose. They see what I'm seeing. They know that he's a weird guy and he's a disruptive guy. He's probably not their first choice to be president, but they're making a relative bet. They don't like the culture war. They don't like the ultra-woke aspects of the hard left, and they're just going to hold their nose and they're going to vote for him, even though he created 4 years of chaos last time. And I think her job is to get to the middle, explain that she's rational, explain that she's a consensus builder and a team-oriented person. And there's two or three questions. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Who's going to make us worse off? Okay, that's another very big question. Who is more maniacal? Who is more impetuous? Who would Jim Mattis say to you, hey, you got to get him as far away from the presidency as possible? He's a very dangerous man. And then the third one, and I think the most important one, who's a better person? Would you trust Donald Trump with certain things with your family members versus the other? You know, and I think what ends up happening, some people just say, look, I'm a Republican, or I bought into this anti-immigration screed. I like the fear-mongering, or he's a divisive fear-mongering sort of person, and I'm drawn to that. You know, I understand why it's a close race, but there is an opportunity here. Maybe you guys will invite me back before the election. There's an opportunity here where,
of course,
her base expands, registrations are way up, independents start moving towards her, and this is a blowout because, you know, if he continues to operate like this with the eating dogs and the cats and he's got this woman, Laura Loomer, I mean, this racist screed against Indians. I mean, shame on vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance. His wife and his children are of Indian American descent. The fact that they're allowing this type of behavior, this woman's walking in and out of the campaign, up and down the campaign steps of the plane, being at the 9/11 memorial after saying it was an inside job. Uh-huh. And now she's writing screeds about Indian Americans on Twitter. I mean, this is the reprehensible stuff. And so, yeah, some Americans like that. But I'm willing to bet that most Americans are good-hearted. They don't like it. They think it's absurd. And hopefully we'll end Trumpism on November the 5th.
All right, Anthony Scaramucci briefly served as White House Director of Communications under President Trump. Thank you so much. Coming up, he has been one of the longest-serving elected Republican officials in California, which can sometimes be a pretty lonely job. Northern California Congressman Tom McClintock joins us on Countdown 2024 next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
And welcome back. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
Republican Congressman Tom McClintock was first elected to represent the huge 5th Congressional District stretching from Sacramento to Fresno back in 2008. That makes him one of the state's longest tenured Republican elected officials. Being an elected Republican in California can feel a little lonely at times, as the state's been a Democratic stronghold for nearly two decades. I know, I'm sorry. McClintock, one of the most conservative members of Congress, also at times finds himself alone in his own Republican Party. Congressman McClintock joining us now on Countdown to discuss all of it.
I feel like we should be playing violins in the background. Are you that lonely, Congressman?
No, in fact, in California, I think I'm getting lots of new friends. We're watching Republican registration increasing again. Democratic registration is declining. I think people are finally getting fed up with conditions in California and are beginning to realize we don't have to live this way. All that has happened to California is bad public policy, and we can change that the moment we summon the political will to do so. And the same thing for our country.
But so do you see California very soon becoming a red state?
Not immediately, but I do think we're going to have a very good year in California this year. And I think that there is a growing awareness among Californians that we can't continue down the road we've been on, particularly those of us that remember the golden California that our parents gave to us 50 years ago.
You are a very classic conservative. Where do you kind of fit in with this whole MAGA world?
Well, you know, I've told folks since 2016, Donald Trump wasn't my first choice. That was Scott Walker then. This year it was Ron DeSantis. But I can certainly tell the difference between a fire and a fireman. And if a fireman is trying to save my house from burning down, I really don't care if from time to time he misbehaves. And I think that that sums up Trump rather well. The overall sum of his policies produced a remarkable period of prosperity for our country. You know, most people can remember back 4 years ago. We won the biggest, one of the biggest tax cuts in American history, the greatest regulatory relief, and Trump had achieved the lowest unemployment rate in 50 years, the lowest poverty rate in 60 years, the fastest wage growth in 40 years. Our border was secure.
Okay, but I have a question. I have a question for you, Congressman, and it's a sincere question. So please take it that way. When you said just before that, you know, if you have somebody coming to rescue your house from fire, you can sort of forgive misbehavior, that sort of thing. What sort of things do you think Donald Trump did when he was president, and maybe right after and before he was president? What do you include under that umbrella as misbehavior?
Well, I don't like the personal attacks. I don't. You know, we saw a bit of that in the debate last week. He let himself get rattled to the point where he lost focus on the issues. What should have been a slam dunk question: are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? So I don't like that drama. But overall, I like his policies. And the policies proved to be very good for the American people and the American nation.
Do you ever get a chance to bend the former president's ear with some of these things that you're talking about? You know, like maybe enough with the personal attacks, enough with these sorts of things that he says?
Not recently, but I do know a lot of people who have. And, you know, he's pretty set in his ways. That's you know, the one thing that I think comes through is you see the real Donald Trump. And I think people do recognize that genuineness with all of the defects. And you know, take a look at the debate. I think most of us would agree it was a disaster from any kind of debate standpoint. And yet we're seeing significant movement in the post-debate polls toward Trump, especially in the battleground states among independent voters. And I'm wondering if their takeaway of that is simply this: he's a very angry man, and he's angry about the very same things I'm angry about.
All right, we're going to hold you there for just a minute or so. We're going to close out our Friday show, our very first week, in fact, of Countdown 2024, with some final thoughts from Congressman McClintock when we return. Well, thanks for sticking with us on Countdown. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
Northern California Republican Tom McClintock remains with us here on Countdown 2024.
So, Congressman, to wrap up the show, and you're a part of it also, do you think that this is going to be as close a race as the polls are indicating? I mean, Harris did get a bump after the debate with Trump, but it is still incredibly close. How close do you think it's going to be?
Well, I can't see the future, but I'll tell you this: I just checked the RCP average. There's 1.5 points separating them. That's been about the separation for the last month. As I said, we're seeing some significant movement among independent voters in the battleground states toward Trump after the debate. And the RCP no toss-up map right now has him winning the Electoral College if the election were held today. I think the country's really going through a realignment of a period where the old coalitions break apart and they form around new agendas and new leaders. And you see that in the Republican Party. I mean, all of the corporate interests have fled the Republican Party, the royalist wing, you know, the Cheneys and the Rockefeller wing, that group, Romney's, they've all begun to separate by mutual agreement. But look at what's happening with the Democrats. They are losing now huge numbers of ethnic voters, urban voters, working voters, young voters, Jewish voters, Catholic voters. These were the key constituencies of the Democratic Party throughout the 20th century. And you're seeing now large numbers of them. splitting off. So I think we could be in a realigning presidential election, and it might end up not being that close.
All right. California Republican Congressman Tom McClintock, thank you very much for being with us. We have a lot planned for you next week on Countdown 2024, starting with the Monday show, when we'll hear from a pair of college-aged voters, both voting in their very first presidential elections. And we're going to talk about that elusive youth vote. And later next week, we'll go right to the source on Project 2025, talking with one of the very architects of the plan from the Heritage Foundation. That and much more next week on Countdown. And remember, we are here every afternoon at 2:30 through Election Day. And if you miss a show, you can catch up with a replay at 8 o'clock at night. And also, of course, on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. Just search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.